Very good afternoon to you. This is Viv Sutherland, and I want to welcome you all to Women's Studies. I should start by apologizing to Lynn Samuels, whose program preceded this, and whose name I forgot to include in what they call an outro. So my apologies to Lynn, and for those of you who are listening, that was a marvelous interview she did with Gloria Emerson, who you heard here last week. My guests today on Women's Studies are two very fine women. Dr. Donna Allen, who is the editor of Media Report to Women, and Carol Getzoff, who many of you may remember if you're old-time listeners to BAI, from this air. How long ago was it?
Oh, many years ago. You have to be a very old-time listener. I think it was 71, 72.
Yeah, who is now doing a program called A Woman's Place at Another Station. And I am not clear as to whether we can mention other stations on our air, so we won't. But I've seen your program listed. They carry the listings in the Times.
Yeah.
So if you look for it, you'll find it. That other station is a commercial station, and I have been wanting for quite some time to do a series of programs on women and the media. And I thought this would be a real nice way to start it off by having a woman who worked here previously and who now works in commercial radio, and Dr. Allen, who has done some of the finest work around, the only work around, regarding women and the media, in an attempt to create a dialogue between women who are active in all phases of media by publishing her newsletter. So it's a real pleasure to have both of you on. Do you want to start, Dr. Allen, by talking a little bit about Media Report to Women?
Sure. We have come upon the scene because there was nothing that was connecting women in the media and outside the media together in a common desire to do something about the way way the media was being was portraying women, the way it was covering their news, or not covering it, and the way women were unable to move ahead within the stations or the papers or whatever other media it was. And as I'm sure you know, if you aren't aware of what's going on, you're less likely to take action yourself that you may have thought is needed than if you can keep up with what other people are doing. Our reaction has been, when we find, when we report something that's going on, to have people write in and say, I've been thinking of that for years, but now that I see that somebody's got this idea, I've gotten together a group of women, we're going to do something, or what they do is then improve on it, take another step further. And then we in turn report that again to other people, and then other people, it escalates the action. This thing, this sort of thing was very badly needed. There was almost no communication among women. There were some in the professional women's media organizations, mm-hmm. the press women and the women in communication, but they didn't, they took it more from a professional point of view. Now, recently, they have been going into more into how women are portrayed, but at that time, when we got started, it was a great vacuum.
How do you see the status of women, or the image of women in the media today? Has there been any improvement over the last, say, 5 or 10 years?
Yes, there's been some improvement. That's clear, but compared to what needs to be done, I'm not sure how measurable it is, sorry to say. But still, you know, this is what we're about, to get it started, and hopefully it will increase as people say, well, sure, why shouldn't... I'll give you an example. The old decade of the past, I would say, started with people believing that women... women's announcers, their voices weren't acceptable. You remember that old saying that people didn't want to hear women's voices, they weren't as nice. Personally, I thought they were better, but then, you know, I mean, that was a saying and everybody believed it. Now, you can almost scarcely remember that that was ever believed. And yet, I would say that that's some progress. On the other hand, we still have a long ways to go as far as having women in the positions where what she is announcing reflects women's activities in the country.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's gotten better. It certainly has changed, but now the question is women anchors and women doing political commentary. Before it was, well, women's voices. Nobody would take women's voices seriously. You know, of course people take women's voices seriously, but the question in television news particularly is, well, can people really take a television news anchor who's a woman seriously? Are they going to take that news that's reported from a woman seriously? I think women have come up against that a lot in television. And if you'll notice, there are no political commentators, women commentators on television.
I've also noticed from monitoring other radio stations that there are very few women who do just straight music programs.
Mm-hmm.
On the top 40 stations, on the middle of the road stations, on the classical or jazz stations, there are just you know, you can count them probably on the fingers of one hand, the number of women who just do regular radio.
I think what's happened, I think you have to separate, when you talk about women in the media, you have to separate two things: image, the image of women, the way they're portrayed, and jobs. How many women are working in the media. Now, what's happened, particularly at ABC, since the, I think as a result of the 72 suit, the now suit,
mm-hmm.
against WABC TV license renewal is that a lot of token jobs, or a certain number of token jobs, have been given to women, so that women have infiltrated the media. There are women in the media, no doubt about it, but they're still not in the important jobs. You can count the women you know, who were in important administrative jobs on the fingers of one hand on all the networks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the push now, to really get into the power positions.
Well, we see three areas. Those two, yes, portrayal of women and also women in jobs. But we also see a third one, and that's coverage of women's activities as news.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, news is defined so that it almost excludes women per se. That is, things that women do are considered not to be news just because it's women doing it. Well, you know, that's the society stuff or something like that, even when it isn't. The real test is whether if the person were a man, it would be covered, you know, but it's not covered. This is what we find. And until we get a redefinition of news that includes what women are doing. Oh, I'll give you an example of the kind of thing that might be the way into it. We and also news media say that media is a reflection of society. Okay, if it's a reflection of society, then what other women, whatever women are doing should be included as being news. This has yet to come about. But that's a third area that we see a lot of complaints about and is a very important one too. And this is one that also reflects, of course they're all tied together, but definitely reflects the number of women you have in these top positions, because the assignment editors on papers and the news directors, they're only, you know, it's a very tiny percentage of news directors who are women. Well, if it's men who are making the assignments, they're naturally going to assign stories by their definition of what's news, and this is what is excluding women. So we've got to get some women in there in those positions to make more realistic assignments.
There's another very important point. And I don't remember where I read the background information on this, but I do remember reading it, and I remember it fairly accurately. The sports coverage that we see on television, that we hear on the radio, that we see in the newspapers, is aimed at an audience which is known to be very, very small. In other words, there are only maybe 10 or 15% of the population who is really interested in what is being put into the sports pages of the newspapers, and who is really interested in the sports coverage that is given within the news over the electronic media. The reason that they broadcast that and that they publish that is because that this is a special interest group that sponsors see as being one which it is viable for them to reach in terms of generating money for themselves. But the fact remains that this is a very small audience, and there's an enormous amount of coverage given to football and baseball and hockey and basketball and, you know.
Yeah, I think what we do is we underestimate the power that we have, particularly as in groups. You know, the media is scared of groups of women who make noise.
Mm-hmm.
ABC lost lost the suit that they pressed in 72.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result of that suit, WABC TV and the rest of ABC created more jobs for women as a direct result of that suit. And as a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that the job that I do was created as a result of that, just because they got scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to have to, you know, they succumbed to that pressure in an indirect way.
So the problem that we are faced with then, I think, boils down very simply to one of generating enough energy among women who really feel that what they are seeing and hearing in the media is wrong and bad, and they want more attention paid to their own their own needs, and getting those women to do something about it.
Yeah, this is where we come in with a media report, because as long as people don't know that there's any action, As long as they don't know that other people are complaining about the same thing they object to, very little action takes place. So the first step to action really is getting the kind of information you need to take action. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to do it alone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so our primary concern, we don't have any editorials. That is, we don't say our opinion of what, you know, this is good or that's bad. We don't say that at all. We don't use any adjectives. We just plain report what's actually happening. And we usually put it in the words of the people who are doing it. You know, we let them, like, we'll quote from the text of that WABC suit. And we'll just give this flat information, you know, but what it does is telling what women are actually doing. And this we see as far more powerful than if we had, you know, tons of editorials saying, do this, do that, you know, we must this, we must that. And that's the way it's working, too. Just even knowing, having the information is really the first step to action.
I think what's happening, too, is women are becoming much more sophisticated in the way that they're organizing. I heard recently about a group of women who got together and bought stock in a movie company. And as stockholders exerted pressure on the film company to improve the image of women in their film products. So, you know, it's going into an economic sphere, which is where they feel it, which mm-hmm. is where sponsorship and so on, that's where it's gonna come in. I think more action like that would be fabulous.
You're also doing a course at the New School, aren't you, Carol?
Yeah.
That's going to address some of these issues?
Yeah, I'm doing a course at the New School. Registration for it is still open, and I think it's going to be really exciting. The course is called Women in Media, and basically it's going to include guests, prominent women in the media, in all aspects of the media. And you mentioned before sports, that we're going to cover women sports casting. We're going to cover women technicians, behind the scenes, on camera, talent, what jobs are available, image of women in media, and some of the guests are Nora Ephron, Marlene Sanders, Ellen Fleischer, Pat Carbine. So I think it's going to be really exciting.
I generated the idea of doing this sort of mini-series on women and the media for, I guess, a very specific reason. I've discovered that whenever I go places and people recognize me, either from my voice or having been introduced to me, they immediately go into this litany of what is right and wrong with this particular radio station and its portrayal of women and other radios and television and this and that and the other thing. And I find myself repeating over and over and over and over again, telling me isn't going to do any good. You have to go home and write a letter. You have to talk to the management. You have to talk to the people who are directly responsible for what you find right and what you find wrong about the media.
Oh, I'd like to underline that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really is important to write those letters. They don't get that many letters. It's surprising how few letters can bring about a change.
Mm-hmm. Right. My boss will get a letter about a program that I've done, and he'll come and talk to me about it, whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. So they're very nervous, particularly in areas concerning mm-hmm. women.
How do you find working at a commercial station as opposed to having worked here at wonderful anarchistic non-commercial
disorganized
WBAI?
Well, it's actually not that different for me, and that's because my programs come under the heading of public service, mm-hmm. which means I don't have commercials on the programs.
You can't have commercials?
They don't sell time for it. It's not, I don't think it's legal according to the FCC. Hmm. They have to have a certain number of hours of public service programs on their air to meet license requirements. So they don't, in other words, I don't have commercials, which is great for me, mm-hmm. but they don't make money from my programs. So on the one hand, they leave me alone and I have pretty much total freedom as to what I want to put on the air. On the other hand, they don't pay a lot of attention to what I do. So one program is not in a good time slot, although my woman's program is in a good time slot. So it's a mixed bag. I like it. I like it a lot. I like the fact that it's taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that I have a feeling that I'm not sure about the numbers in terms of listeners, but there's a certain weight that the commercial stations hold, which, whether we like it or not, is the truth.
Yeah. I get the feeling sometimes from having taken phone calls on the air and the kind of mail that I get, that I can fairly accurately define my audience as being white, middle class, 50-50 male and female. But I can usually tell that how they're thinking and what they're, you know, what they're feeling. It is extremely rare that I will get, for example, a phone call from someone who disagrees with something that they've heard on my program.
Hmm.
How does that happen in commercial radio? Do you find that same kind of... Because I think that WBAI tends to draw this sort of homogenous mix of people that
people
you wouldn't get it...
Because that's what they want to hear, that kind of approach.
I like to do live programs just for that reason, because I'm very interested in who the audience is, and I really do try to compromise, and sometimes it is a compromise, between the kinds of programs I want to do and what I think my listening audience wants to hear. My listening audience is very young, I think, because it's a rock station for the most part. And I have a feeling that my listeners are younger than I ever thought they were. Maybe like 15 through 25 is the majority.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm doing programs that are basically directed to that age group. Although it's interesting because when I do programs on subjects of interest to women who might be older, let's say in their 30s, I'll get those people calling. It's more varied than I think, although it is basically a young audience. I try to be responsive to them because I really feel that I would like it to be a forum for them.
Do you play women's music?
No, I don't, except it's mainly talk. I do some cuts from, in between phone calls and the interview, but I don't do a whole program of music.
Mm-hmm.
I do get callers who disagree. And it's interesting to me to, I think that there might be more of a difference at the station I work at than here in terms of homogeneity.
Yeah, because that's the thing I find most amazing. The only times I've ever found people calling and disagreeing really strongly with what's been said have been on really hot topics. Homosexuality and the Catholic Church.
Right.
And then what happens is I'll get phone calls from people who have been Catholics all their lives and see what I'm saying as being a direct attack on them and their religion.
Mm-hmm.
And other issues that center around either religion or sexuality. Then I'll find that's enough to get people to call up and disagree. But generally, that very rarely happens here, and I suspect it's because of who our audience is.
I'm very surprised that I have, sometimes when I take calls, I'll have 75% men calling.
Yeah.
And that always astonishes me.
Yeah.
Because the program basically is geared to subjects of interest to women. So I think there's something interesting going on out there in terms of how we separate men and women and what they're interested in, when it might be a very false kind of distinction.
That's happened to me too, and it's always a shock to take that especially that first phone call and to hear a man's voice.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah.
Well, is it that men are more assertive, and they all tend to convert their feeling into action quicker than women might?
Sure. There is that element of it, and there's also the old line about how if there are men in the audience, they'll always be the first ones to stand up and speak, and at least one of them will attempt to give you a lecture on whatever it is that you're doing and how you are or not doing it right or wrong and what you should be doing instead.
Mm-hmm.
That always happens.
Yeah.
Right? No matter.
We have that in the media report too. Of the people who write, the ones who are assertive about telling you what's wrong, you know, are usually turn out to be men. Oh, we have men subscribers, even though it's media report to women.
Mm-hmm.
that's all right. You know, we have a lot of media who are subscribers too. But it's interesting to see that the men are the ones who have to pass their judgment on you, you know, to decide whether you're right or wrong, whereas the women are more inclined to offer their suggestions but not feel that their opinion is better than yours.
Mm. Well, I tell you, I have to admit that I love radio. I love it, and I love the freedom of it, which, whether it's commercial or non-commercial, there's much more freedom in radio than, say, television,
sure,
for instance, because of the pressures in television.
Sure.
And I just, it's an amazing thing because you never know who's out there. You don't have a sense. It's such a split between being in a little studio and talking into a microphone and all of those radios that are on out there. You don't know who's there listening. You don't know how many people are listening. You know, it's a real split between what you're doing in this little room and what's happening out there in the world.
Yeah, I get, do you know Sam Jolty?
Yeah.
He tells a story. He used to do programming here, and he tells a story about one time when he was on the air doing his own engineering, as I do. And he got a phone call, he had a piece of music on, he got a phone call from a listener who said that he had been listening and he thought that maybe his stereo was broken because the stereo light wasn't lit, even though he knew this particular piece of music and that it wasn't stereo. And Sam looked at the control board and realized that he hadn't punched up the stereo button, mm-hmm, so that the signal wasn't going out in stereo. And that's why the guy's little light wasn't lit. So he leaned over to the console and he punched the stereo button up and he said, "Now is your light lit?" And the guy says, "Yeah." And then Sam took it off and he said, "And now it went out, right?" And the guy looked at it and he said, "Yeah." And Sam said, "And now it's on, right?" And he punched the button on and it was. And the guy says, "Yeah." And Sam took it off and he said, "Now it's off, right?" And the guy says, "Yeah." And Sam said he had this incredible feeling of power, because when he pushed that button, those little red lights on thousands of stereo sets all over the city were going on and off. And it was he who was controlling it.
Yeah.
Right? And there's something of that.
There is. I think a lot of times we don't realize the power that we have, because I look at people and I say, "Oh, God, they look like they have such exciting jobs. Isn't that fantastic? I wish I had a job like that." And people say to me all the time, "Oh, it's great. You're on the air. You're so lucky. There are so many people who wish they were doing that."
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize that that it is not only power, but it's a wonderful opportunity and responsibility, mm-hmm, too. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's where the whole sense of obligation comes in to the audience, when you realize that you have that many people listening. And the question is, are you giving them something that is helpful to them, or something that maybe is distorting reality? Of course, in your program, it's obvious what you're doing, because you're, in a way, redressing an imbalance that there's been in the past. But it has to accompany, I think this is what the regular broadcasters fail to keep in mind, that they have a responsibility as well as this power. I mean, they sometimes get over-impressed with the power and forget that they should be asking themselves, what is the effect of this? In other words, to be responsible for what they're saying and doing, mm-hmm, and making an effort to see that it's accurate. And I say this in the sense that of saying that they should be listening to their audience more. I feel that this is a reaction also that I've heard said so many times, that when the listeners or the readers complain, they're looked on as enemies. You know, they're looked at as if all those people are in something, instead of having this welcome advice to, mm-hmm, them. I mean, they pay a lot of money to have a survey to find out what the audience wants, and yet if they get a bad letter, they say, "Oh, a nasty letter." You know, well, forget how it's said, and listen to what's being told them, because these people are volunteering information to let them know whether they're being responsible or not. There may be only a few people, but as you know, there are many others behind the few who do right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I wish the owners of media and the managers of media, all forms of media, would pay more attention, more respectful attention to the kinds of, we were saying a little bit ago that people should write letters. I say on the other side now, people should pay more attention. They should welcome them, should ask for criticisms as well as advice, because this is one way they can be responsible.
Sure.
I don't think they care a lot about being
responsible.
That's
the problem. That's right. They don't care. It's exactly what I'm saying. That's the trouble.
How did you start Media Report to Women?
Well, I came out of another field, actually. I'm an economist, and I, you know, was not in this area at all. But I came from the same recognition that a lot of other women have had in the last decade, that that the way we're portrayed in the media is the way people treat us. In other words, in a way, the media have taken over reality. And there are a lot of people who believe women are what they see on the media and ignore what they see right in front of them. And as a result, it's very hard to make your own way. If you're in a profession, as I was, they tend to think, well, they've got a stereotyped image of you, and you can't get through it. No matter how much you say, well, look, I'm not what you think, you know, well, look, why don't you listen to what I'm saying? Or it's as if somebody else has gotten there with what they think is reality ahead of you, and you can't be heard. And I think there are a lot of women around the country who are beginning to feel this way too, and I was just one of them. I took this particular route to say, well, look, maybe what we should do is kind of get ourselves together, and this is our goal. We don't preach. We don't, as I say, we don't pass judgment and take editorials. We just pass the information along of what, well, as our subtitle is, what women are doing and thinking about the communications media, and we cover everything. Film, broadcast, print, music, art, theater, you know, the whole range of means of communication. And